This is WSBT's Community Update on 96.1 WSBT.
Good morning, I'm John Hoffman. Community Update consists of a recap of some of the leading stories from the past week. If something happens to your kids at school, you want them to get the best care possible. The American Academy of Pediatrics recommends that schools have at least one registered nurse on staff, but the reality is that 60% of public schools nationwide have a part-time nurse or, in many cases, no nurse at all.
One school nurse told me one of the hardest parts of her job is dealing with all the misconceptions around what she does. A quarter of all children now suffer from some type of chronic illness, like diabetes or asthma, and it's school nurses who help keep them in class. They also address any bullying efforts, mental health promotion, sex education, and substance abuse.
Sometimes people will say, well, what do you do?
As a school nurse at Concord Oxbow Elementary and nursing coordinator for Concord Schools, Stacy Pavlovic is accustomed to people dramatically underestimating what she does.
People tend to think of, kids will have a stomach ache or scrape a knee, and sure, we're there for that too, but there's so much more.
But the days of school nurses only attending to bumps and bruises, if those days ever even existed, are gone.
The kinds of health problems we're seeing in schools has changed dramatically.
As the list of requirements for school nurses has gotten longer, there's now a nationwide shortage. Nationally, 39% of schools have a full-time nurse, 35% have a part-time nurse, and 25% don't have one at all. The Indiana Department of Education sent out a survey to public schools. Of those that responded, 32% had a part-time nurse or no nurse at all. And the ratio is one registered nurse to roughly every 1,000 students. That may sound reasonable until you consider what they're dealing with.
I see a lot of students with type 1 diabetes, seizure disorders, food allergies, and other severe allergies that may impact students during the day.
School nurses also treat students with mental health conditions, disabilities, concussions, gender transitions, tube feedings. The list goes on and on. Besides treatment, they coordinate health education programs for the entire school and coordinate care between students, parents, and doctors. I asked Pavlovic if she kept any data about nurse-student interactions. What she shared was stunning.
We saw in our 7 school buildings, all of our clinics with our 8 nurses, we saw 41,800 students.
To put that in perspective, when you divide 41,800 student visits by 180 days in the school year, that's 232 visits across all 7 schools each day. Divide that number by the 8 nurses working full-time at Concord Schools, and that's 29 visits for each nurse per day.
There is research to support that when a school nurse is in a building caring for students, their attendance increases, their test scores increase. They're more likely to graduate from high school because of this.
For a lot of these low-income students, a school nurse, that's the only access to health care that students have. But yet, school nurses are often the first thing cut in budget. It just underlines the importance of full-time nurses, right? It's tough to imagine a part-time nurse or a secretary getting to what amounts to 29 student visits per day per nurse.
WSBT 22's Tolly Taylor reporting. One of the big topics at parent meetings with South Bend School Superintendent Todd Cummings this week is the district's ongoing transportation issues. Those issues have been well documented over the last several years, but now the new superintendent is making changes to get busing back on track.
Basically, the district is using new technology to create a new dashboard online system. So this dashboard system will let school officials know how many people are calling in to complain about those school bus issues. And there's a lot of issues that the superintendent says that people call in about. They could be missing the bus, or they could be needing to change their school bus stop. So South Bend School Superintendent tells me people call for those reasons, and there's going to be an online tool on the South Bend Schools website that allows people to see how many people are able to take their calls, when is the best time to call the call center, and an average of how long they'll have to wait to get those calls answered. South Bend School Superintendent says these are the first steps in fixing transportation problems.
Technology transportation not working, buses being late. So it's been 19 years of those kinds of issues, and we know that it's a new day. We have to be able to fix it. We can't move forward unless we have transportation working properly.
The South Bend School Superintendent also tells me that they're in the process of finding a new director of transportation.
WSBT 22's Bree Isom reporting. Meanwhile, the South Bend Community School Corporation could have one fewer high school as soon as next year. The school board approved the 2020 budget Monday, but the district is set to lose around $17 million next year.
Closing a high school has been suggested as a possible way to deal with that loss. The district is also working on a tax referendum that could be on the ballot in the spring. The suggestion of closing schools has created concern, but the superintendent says they're not there yet.
Please say aye.
Aye.
In a unanimous vote, the South Bend School Board approved the budget for next school year, but a storm of financial problems is quickly approaching.
And any cuts we make are going to be as far away from students and teachers and principals as possible.
As we previously reported, the district has lost 700 students since last year and is set to lose an additional 500 next year. That will result in a loss of $3.5 million in state funding on top of losses from property tax caps, which will be around $13 million. The district now has to figure out how to make up for the loss.
The district's going to have to do bold, innovative things to keep the students we have, to get our students to return, but also take a really deep look at our processes and make sure that dollars are flowing from the boardroom to the classroom.
According to our reporting partners at the South Bend Tribune, the district's budget director mentioned closing a high school as a possible solution. Currently, the district can hold nearly 24,000 students. However, current enrollment is at just 16,000. Every high school has lost students with the exception of John Adams, but Superintendent Todd Cummings calls talks of a closure premature.
How can you justify keeping so many buildings when you just don't have the students to fill them?
Oh, I don't think we can justify it. And so when we look at capacity, we look at capacity issues, we look at innovative programs that we want to do, we'll have to take all that into consideration.
The district is banking on its referendum, which would increase property taxes by 37 cents for every $100 in assessed value. But if that doesn't happen, drastic changes would need to be made.
Because the outcome is bleak if we don't pass a referendum successfully.
And if that referendum passed, it would first pay for deferred maintenance and then would be used in other areas. We did try to get comment from Board President John Anella this evening, but he left before we could speak with him.
WSBT 22's Max Lewis reporting. A formal public presentation on plans for the Indiana Enterprise Center happened Tuesday. People who live near the proposed site in New Carlisle accused the county of keeping them in the dark during the approval process.
Council members brought lots of concerns to the table from their constituents. People who were there say they were glad they got a chance to listen, but still they aren't completely satisfied.
There's many concerns. There will continue to be.
Really, I think more concerns were brought up tonight than we had before.
A string of questions from the county council tonight asking how many jobs the Indiana Enterprise Center would bring, how much the land would be worth if it just stayed a farm, and how to make sure property doesn't get taken from people unwillingly.
If you're looking to acquire property for any prospective development, I think a main point that has not been discussed nearly enough is we're looking at willing buyer and willing seller.
It's going to stay the farmland until a farmer decides to sell his land. So it really is one of these where we're just looking to set the table for that opportunity and for development, if development is to occur. But if it never occurs, then those farms create jobs and create opportunities, and we're okay with that too.
Opponents say they're frustrated it took so long to have a public meeting, but Shalio says he's been trying his best to involve the public for every step.
Part of, I guess, the argument to why we haven't had more is we really haven't had anything to talk about. So now we're at a point where we've got everything kind of analyzed and studied and coordinated, and so now it's the time to bring to the public kind of where we are in the process.
Everyone seems to agree there's a lot of work going forward.
Right now, economic development looks like from the bottom up. We need public input and community buy-in for projects to succeed. This is just a top-down project from a few people who don't live from here, and we know that this is not going to succeed if that's done that way.
Shalio assured me that there will be more meetings in the future with a chance for public comment at those ones. He has plans on releasing drafts of the plan for the developments online, and he's going to ask for public input online through at least November.
WSBT 22, Selena Guevara reporting. South Bend Mayor Pete Buttigieg, campaigning in New Hampshire this week for the Democratic presidential nomination, spoke at a forum about improving economic status for women.
I'm proposing that we dramatically increase what the Small Business Administration is able to do to provide capital, knowing that access to capital is a barrier for women's entrepreneurship. And ensure the federal government is doing its part, because, of course, the federal government is one of the biggest customers of any kind in the world. And we need to make sure that we're spending taxpayer dollars in a way that's consistent with our values, which means having more ambitious targets in terms of how businesses owned and led by women are able to access business opportunities with the federal government. So I just want to highlight that as another way to deal with this. In addition to what we mentioned earlier about gender pay transparency and making sure that wages are boosted across the board, knowing that that disproportionately benefits women. We cannot allow it to continue to be the case that women disproportionately are effectively punished for doing what is celebrated for men. You know, there's evidence that men who have children actually go further in their careers. It's the exact opposite effect of what is happening to women, and we've got to clear that up. If we want to really be serious when we talk about family values, you know, my campaign is largely about values, and a lot of part of how we got to where we are is that some of these values have been captured a little bit, and I think pulled into a certain political agenda on one side. But to me, family values means making it easier to support a family in this country.
South Bend Mayor Pete Buttigieg in New Hampshire this past week. Lake Michigan was packing a punch earlier this week, with strong winds piling up big waves along the Berrien and Van Buren County shorelines.
Certainly what's happening here is making changes to the lakeshore, and a lot of people came out here to marvel at these spectacular sights, but they're also wondering what this could mean for the future.
You know, this is what you live for, the lake, and just hearing the roaring of the waves out here is amazing.
Jordan Brewer came to check out the waves in St. Joseph today with his family.
You know, it's crazy to see how much power the actual lake has. You know, it's unreal. People don't realize how powerful and strong.
City manager John Hodgson says the beach comes and goes in areas where it's not protected. But in terms of today's wave action, he says while the waves are really turbulent offshore, they're more rolling in at the water's edge.
We do come down and look and see if there are issues. The things that we usually see specifically are like storm drains. There are private properties that have some greater exposure.
Homeowner John Onderko lives above the bluff along Old Lakeshore Drive. Below his home is a big section of erosion. For him, this wind and wave spectacle is unsettling.
It makes one nervous because the seawall that is there is in a state of disrepair. It's basically worn out after 100 years. And there is apparently an ongoing effort to repair it.
A big player in that ongoing repair effort is railroad company CSX, because it operates railroad tracks along the bluff. It's taken some steps to fix two erosion areas below Old Lakeshore Drive in recent years.
I was in contact with CSX last night, you know, regarding that erosion issue, pointing out that that's still something that they need to attend to.
Onderko hopes he gets the word it's all taken care of soon.
The worst case scenario would be that something washed away in a train going to or from Chicago from Grand Rapids fell into the water. You would have hundreds of people that would be injured or killed.
I reached out to CSX to learn more about the progress of the repairs, and I haven't heard back today.
That's WSBT 22's Caroline Torrey reporting. Researchers from Notre Dame have discovered how breast cancer is spreading in bones. This discovery is a critical step in learning how to stop the cancer from spreading and to treat patients. Right now, when cancer spreads to the bone, it is considered incurable.
Which is why this discovery has real potential to help patients. Lori Littlepage is the Campbell Family Assistant Professor of Cancer Research at Notre Dame. She and her graduate student, Ricardo Romero Moreno, have authored a study on their findings. Their team was able to discover what breast cancer does when it spreads to the bone. They identified a pair of proteins believed to be critical in that process, and they were able to identify factors that could either activate those proteins to develop into cancer or inhibit cancer growth. Their discoveries could help treat patients with breast cancer that has spread to the bone.
Basic research is really important in discovering what we need to tackle to help patients. Sometimes these discoveries we as basic scientists don't see them translate into patients. But in this case, we're working at the steps really close to where we would use them in cancer patients.
The Kelly Cares Foundation was instrumental in funding this research. Right now, the group is applying for funding for the next phase of research, which will be helping to design preclinical studies. The goal there is to develop a strategy to do clinical trials in patients.
WSBT 22's Kristen Bean reporting.
The views expressed on WSBT's Community Update are those of the guests and do not necessarily reflect the views of the host, WSBT Radio, its staff, or management. Join us again next week on Community Update on The Sports Leader, 96.1 WSBT.